This is the North by Northwest podcast for Saturday, the 17th of January. I'm going to be talking to William Steinberg, who's an architect, a printmaker, and a sculptor. A show called, intriguingly, Architecture of the Ruin is on now at the Ferry Building Gallery in West Vancouver. It features etchings and sculptures by architect and artist William Steinberg. The prints are highly detailed and often filled with historical and mythological references, depicting in many cases structures and design elements. And I had a chance to interview William this week about his work, and I began my conversation by asking him whether he was an architect first who turned to printmaking, or the other way around.
It started in architecture school. And in my undergraduate years, I had a professor named Leslie Lasky, who was an artist, not an architect. And he had been a student of Moholy Nagy of the Bauhaus. And if you're familiar with the Bauhaus, I mean, their curriculum was a very interesting and broad-ranged curriculum. So we studied color theory sort of via Paul Klee. We did exercises that I've seen in books that Paul Klee had done with his students. And we also did woodcuts.
And this was in architecture school?
Architecture school. And it was a second year studio. Everybody had to do it. Everybody had to go through Leslie Lasky, whether they liked it or not, you know, whether they wanted to be have that artistic side or just be, you know, straight architects. But anyway, we did woodcuts and I loved it. And so I sort of kept that up. It's actually very easy to do relief prints. You can do it at home. We have ink and a roller and wood. So when I got out of architecture school, I then worked for an architect who liked Piranesi very much and wanted to learn how to do etching. So we actually closed down the office one day a week and we went to an etching course.
I love that.
Yeah. It was a very small office. At one time, it was just the two of us.
Huh.
So, but we did a lot of looking at other things, not just architecture. And that was very enjoyable. After that, I really kept up with it. And what it also did is it opened up to me sort of the whole field of printmaking and who was printmaking and who did printmaking in history. So starting with Piranesi, we actually got there's an English etcher named F.L. Griggs, Frederick Landseer Griggs, who was also an architect and a very, very fine draftsman. He did 57 plates in his entire lifetime. He's considered one of the great English etchers of the 20th century.
But he only ever did 57 plates?
Only did 57. And surprisingly, at the Boston Public Library, they have every single print that he did. There was an American architecture student named Comstock who went to Griggs back in the 30s maybe, because he died in 37. And he basically said to him, how do you do it? And this fellow, Comstock, wrote a book all about his plates. And Griggs basically wrote down everything, how long it was in the acid bath and, you know, what kind of ink. So there's this book that the Boston Public Library put out, like an edition of 500. And so I bought a copy. And they're exquisite. And they're all Gothic. I mean, you would look at it and say, well, gee, this guy was living, you know, sometime in the 1800s. But and they're just absolutely gorgeous. So that was, you know, there are these sort of discoveries that just kept me going. And there was the Napoleonic expeditions to Egypt, which was another. And this was a book of two volumes that the Princeton Architectural Press put out in the mid-80s of a lot of plates. There were over 800 plates that were done for this, and they didn't publish that many, but quite a few of all the engravings that were done by these architects and engineers that Napoleon brought to Egypt in the 1790s. And they documented all the ruins. And then they came back to England and put something like 2,000 engravers on the job, and they produced 24 volumes. And I think the second edition had about 36 volumes. I mean, and these were very expensive at that time, so not everybody really could see them. But they put them out, and seeing and getting these two copies from the press in the 80s was great. And I've sort of incorporated a lot of those images and things into my work over the years.
And what is it that you really enjoy about creating work this way, as opposed to drawing, as opposed to, I don't know, painting?
Well, or I think it's the process, and it's very time consuming.
And many, many steps, right?
Yeah, and a lot of steps. So at times I think what I always did is I sort of balanced that with doing watercolors. And to me, they're very fluid, they're very quick, they're very immediate. And so if I feel I'm getting bogged down, whether in work as an architect or doing etching, you know, you whip out the watercolors and you can do that. So, but I do like the process, and I think it's just sort of stayed with me over time.
It seems like there's something almost mysterious about it, too. You have...
Well, you never quite know what it's
exactly.
How it's going to come out.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that can be the downside of it, too. You have an acid bath. You're relying on whoever made the acid bath. I work in a studio here in Vancouver called Malaspina down on Granville Island, and there are sort of two acid baths that you have. If you're working with zinc, you're using a nitric acid. And if you're working with copper, you're using a ferric. And there's a way to mix them, and there's different strengths. What I've found over time is that the copper is more forgiving in that it's a much slower bite, which means the line you're going to get is going to be probably truer. Zinc is a little faster in terms of its bite. And it depends, obviously, on how you mix the acids. So there's, you know, depending how long you leave it in, you know, you have to test it. There are a lot of things that you can do to make sure that you're going to get what you want. But there is always that mystery. And I always love it when you pull that first print and, you know, you sort of see how it's gone.
You get the reveal. Can you go back then after that and change anything?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, not always easily, but I mean, if you've ever looked at prints or looked at a book, you might see that they talk about the states of a print,
mm-hmm.
and that's where a person has pulled a first state and then they've gone back and they've reworked the plate. Now, this F.L. Griggs would work it maybe 8 times, and what was beautiful about the book is that it would show the various images and show the different states so you could actually see what this fellow did. And, you know, there's a way to scrape the line down to nothing so you can restart. And some of the stuff he did was unbelievable. I don't think I'd have the patience to to actually scrape away. But yes, you can.
Was it ever hard for you to keep focused on architecture? Because it sounds like this became such a passion.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with architecture, I always looked at it that there was sort of the business of architecture and there's the art of architecture. And when you're working in a firm, and I was working in a firm because I didn't really want the stress and the responsibility to be on my own, but you're dealing with a lot of the business of architecture. You're dealing with administration, you're dealing with clients, you're dealing with the city, you're dealing with those kinds of tasks. And the art of architecture, unfortunately, in some firms, and depending on what kind of buildings you're building, is a very small part. So, I was able to sort of do that, and then I could then sort
Come
of roll up
art,
my sleeves and do the art of art. And really, architecture is sort of the art of imagination and memory. So you're always trying to invent something. But you're also trying to recall the past because there's a continuum in architecture. There are certain principles, there are certain standards, there's a history. And I look at it the same way with my etching or with art, is that you are trying to invent something new, but you also can recall and you can integrate that into something that then becomes something new.
When did the sculpture come into it all then, William?
About 5 years ago, I decided... And some people decided for me that it was good not to be in the office. And I decided at that point, well, what I really want to try to do is to do a bronze. I looked at all my etchings and said, well, all of these could easily be made into 3D. So I had this idea of one particular image and found out about the Capilano program, and I went up and talked to George, and he was intrigued because here was an architect who wanted to do art as opposed to a lot of his students who wanted to go into architecture.
Right, yeah.
So I started in, and basically for the first year, I was really just welding and doing steel. I guess I sort of was watching the other people. Some people were actually pouring bronzes and gating them. And it's a very long, difficult process, which I didn't realize. I thought it was easier. I thought I could actually, you know, I thought, you know, occasionally you'll see that they're an edition of a sculpture. There's, you know, like one of five. And then I thought, oh, I'll do, you know, I'll do a couple.
So etching wasn't quite difficult enough. You had to start.
Well, yeah. You know, so after about a year or so of doing steel and concrete, which was a lot of fun, I tackled the bronze and enjoyed that very much. And it is a very long process, but very rewarding. And I mean, I love the feel of the material. There's the weight of it and sort of, you know, just the longevity that you can see as you work on it, how it's going to patina, how it's going to weather.
Something so intriguing to me about taking, you know, when you think of your career as an architect and creating structures and now you physically creating.
Yeah, well,
structures.
Exactly. I mean, in a way, it's architecture on another scale. I mean, I always felt that about when I was working on various projects, we would also sometimes do furniture. And furniture very much, you know, is it's a small scale, and it always seemed so much easier in a sense. Fewer parts, but you also had a lot of room to create.
You were talking about being at Cap College and just going out and finding bits of metal that were out there available to be used and kind of the inspiration that would come from that, too.
Well, sure. You know, you walk amongst this and you look at it and you say, well, what could I use that for? And what, you know, what about that? So, you know, you take it in and then start looking at it. And there's still a lot of drawing. I mean, that's the other thing that I do constantly is I'm constantly drawing ideas. And I mean, and that works for architecture and for art. And that was something also that Lasky back long ago had us do is, you know, get a sketchbook and we had to turn those things in and he had to look at it and see how we were progressing with ideas. So that's something that has always stayed with me. I have tons of sketchbooks. And even found some small watercolor books, which are great, too, to, you know, doodle with. So there are always those ideas. And, you know, you find this material and then start shaping it and cutting it, whatever.
It's nice, too, in this show where the pieces, the sculptural pieces are, like you talked about how they grow from the etchings in many cases. These could be 3D. And they do. They really reference each other.
Oh, yeah. I must say that the gallery, when they set it up beautifully, I mean, there's this real relationship you can see as you walk in between the sculpture and the etchings. And it's they've done a very good job.
If you haven't done so yet, have a look at William Steinberg's website. I've got a link to that on the website at cbc.ca/nxnw. His work is gorgeous. And his exhibit, Architecture of the Ruin, is on display at the Ferry Building Gallery in West Vancouver until January the 25th.